Greetings, citizens of Earth. You are barking a happy tune with my pal Smurf of Smurf and the Magic Tones on 5280 Geek.
From the Mobile 5280 Studios Weekend Geek Update, we are live at Time Warp Comics. Thanks for Wayne and the crew for hosting us as we partake down the trail of dark and creepy with my special guest, Brian. Brian has never been on the show, ever, hurt my feel pads, with special guest, Brett Leader One. Who is here. We are doing a team up with the Colorado Festival of Horror, which will be coming to you September of next year. Our website is live. Check it out. Go to the page. Give us a like. Keep up with us because tickets will soon be available. Guest announcements shortly to come. But in the meanwhile, let us entertain you with a ghost story or seven. Brian is... Are you nationally known? You're rather famous.
I am internet famous.
Internet famous.
Yeah, that's national.
Yes, national.
That's international.
You are the only individual that I know that has actually carried on a conversation with Penn and Teller in regards to the world of the supernatural and right. And tricks and fool us.
This is true.
Which I think is a huge claim to fame.
Well, I've had the opportunity to talk to a lot of famous people about this, and yeah, it's fun, so I plan on keeping and doing it.
So what got you into, I mean, what, how do you classify yourself, and then how did you get into that?
How did I get into that?
Yeah.
Bad choices, too much alcohol, still headed down that path. Let's see, I have to give you the stock answer, but I love this answer.
Okay.
So back when I was a wee one, as they say, my mother was a huge horror movie buff.
Oh, okay.
And my father, not so much. But she wanted somebody to watch movies with.
Okay.
So she drags me, you know, the 5 or 6 year old, to watch The Exorcist, things like this.
That's a rough one at five.
Exactly. So basically what's going on is I'm freaking out, and she's like, don't worry, these aren't real. And she started explaining, writing the stories and doing the special effects and how the movies were made.
All right.
And I got really intrigued in it to the point it was, still is, an obsession. But back 30 years ago, which sounds painful.
Just a wee few decades
exactly,
ago.
I started seeing, you know, these movies that are based on a true story, inspired by actual events.
Right.
And I'm like, well, hold on a minute. Mom told me these aren't real. So it kind of piqued my interest, and I decided I was going to start looking into it.
So when you see something like Paranormal Activity, which, you know, is it comes and goes with the resurgence, only usually around Halloween, but
right.
It's been like a huge trivia question lately because everyone confuses it with like Poltergeist with the clues.
Right.
And it suckered a few people at the last trivia party I was at. But when you see something like that, are you just like, pfft? Or how do you approach that?
I love the movies. I love the books. When it comes to the reality television shows, it's kind of where I draw the line.
Right.
But, you know, with those, you have to watch them kind of with a huge grain of salt and consider them entertainment and mostly comedy. And if you do that...
I thought I was the only one.
It's kind of a drinking game when you watch those, mostly to keep your sanity.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of been my take on it, and... We've been doing this for officially going into 21 years now. So it's been a long, fun ride, and hopefully we're not even halfway through. So,
well, we still have this life and the one afterwards, or at least so I'm told.
So they say.
Now, you've actually, like myself, have done investigations. You have gone out there, and you have tried to find something. You have actually tried to lay hands on something tangible other than it's the pipes or it's a prop or it's just too much cocaine.
Maybe. now, the real answer to this is we've always approached it a little bit different than I'll say pretty much anybody else in the field.
Right.
Which is why we, you know, land in the hands of Penn and Teller and things like that, because people in the skeptical and scientific community will actually pay attention when we jump up and go, hey, we have something.
Right.
Now, the reason for that is the approach. We don't go in looking to find the ghost, looking to talk to the ghost. We go in looking for whatever the answer may be.
Mm-hmm. Whatever the fact is.
Exactly. So if it's a noisy pipe, great, we can explain it. And if it isn't, let's see where that can start pointing us. But that's been a lot different than a lot of other people in the field doing it, which has kind of distanced us from a lot of people in the field, too, because we don't want to just jump out and go, we found a ghost. We want to say, we don't know what it is. We're going to keep looking into this until we find out.
Right. Because when you're dealing with, like Graham from the Paranormal Northern Atlantic Society, he's got a new Ghost Hunters show going on. And I like Graham. I've actually spoken with the man,
and he's
a good, cool guy. But, again, the approach that he takes is, you know, it's kind of scientific, but it is more of the, you know, reality TV approach.
Exactly. And one of the things that I think is interesting about the reality TV thing is I've been on a lot of them.
Yes.
And you find out that, well, real paranormal investigations don't sell.
No. It's kind of boring TV.
Yeah, and I've had a lot of production companies approach me. And the usual final conversation goes along the lines of, well, we really like your approach, and we think you'd make a great show, but you tend to contradict every other show that we have on the network, so we just can't do this.
Which is not disappointing. At the same time, it's kind of encouraging that, you know, you're that fact-laden that it kind of tosses out the charlatans, if you will.
Well, and with the Ghost Hunters TV show, you know, they, up until the end of season two, and I'm going to take full blame for that because the show just before they jumped the shark, I was on.
Were you on that last Halloween special at the end of season two?
I was on the show just before the Halloween special.
Okay.
And they said, would you like to come over to the Stanley Hotel with us and do the next night? And I was like, yeah, I've been on the show now. I'm good. I'm going to go to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think it may have been a little different. But what happened is they had some things that were explainable happen to them, but the production company kind of left it at a, we'll let you decide what it was. And the fans went nuts, and, you know, Sci-Fi comes up to them and goes, so, if you want another season, we need things to happen, because the public really likes that. So it's like a good drug. You have to keep adding to it, because one little creaky noise is good, but you need more and more.
Yeah, you're chasing the purple dragon.
Exactly.
So, in your investigations, your quests, have you gone to the haunted, quote unquote? I'm doing air quotes for those at home playing the home game. the haunted places like the sanitarium in Jersey. Have you investigated the Stanley? I've investigated the Stanley. I got butt kiss.
A lot of. I have some fun stories about the Stanley, but they aren't necessarily ghost stories. mostly Colorado. Mostly because I'm working out of my own wallet. And
well, yeah.
That's how far it will carry me. Now, you know, the Stanley, and I'll give you one example that's kind of fun with that. We were called to become the one paranormal investigation team involved in a documentary that was being made about the ghosts.
Okay.
Or so they said.
Because there's like five different ghosts that supposedly are in the Stanley.
Oh, there's like a billion of them now.
Right.
Because over time,
Jesus.
I have watched the ghost stories build over time. Like you say, I think there's about five traditional ghost stories there.
Mm-hmm.
But when we were there, the ghost documentary turns out to be based on something that I hadn't heard of at the time that they refer to as, and it's the title of the documentary, the Stanley Effect. Their theory was that the hotel is built on top of large deposits of quartz, magnetite, and limestone.
Correct.
And because of that, there's a piezoelectric effect that somehow allows paranormal activity to happen. And when I found out about that, I'm like, now, hold on a minute. We can't prove one way or the other if the electric effect is going to make ghosts appear.
True.
But are the minerals actually there in the first place? So,
which is a valid question.
I traced it down, and I found out that the first claim of that that I could find was actually on that episode of Ghost Hunters. So at the time, I was pretty good friends with those guys, and I called them up, and I'm like, so it says you did a lot of research here. What did you do? They said, well, we went down to the gift shop and asked the guy working behind the counter.
Oh, good Lord.
I'm like, that's not research. So I went that extra step, and I started looking to see if I could figure out what was under the hotel. So I got a hold of what I finally found out is in charge of National Soil Surveys is the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Okay.
So I was honest. I sent him an email that said, you know, hey, there's a theory that the Stanley Hotel is haunted because of this.
Right.
What do you got?
Because usually the one that I always heard, it was just limestone.
Right.
And then they start stacking other minerals, because in the paranormal world, there's always like either limestone or water somehow running water has an effect that it will hold on to residual psychokinetic energy.
Right.
So that was where the foothold started. And then I heard all of the other minerals added on later.
Exactly. Well, what ended up happening is they said, we don't know what's under the hotel because we've never done a soil survey there, which means nobody has done one there.
Nobody has any idea.
They said, we do have a geomagnetic satellite survey of the area. Here it is. No anomalies at all. And at that point, I thought, okay, well, I can at least say we don't know what's under the hotel. As luck would have it, I got an email back from the feds. And it had been through all of the feds by that point.
Right.
And the message was now ghosts in our soil. And the fun part about this is they said, you know, we would really like to be able to conduct and finish the soil survey in that area. Do you think you can get us into the hotel? So think about this. The federal government is asking us, the little paranormal group, if we can get them in.
Hey, can you pull a couple of strings and get us in the door?
Exactly. And, you know, we're crazy, so we did. And so we got to spend 2 days working with 4 branches of the U.S. government. Spend a lot of your tax money, thank you.
Hey, that's what it's there for.
But it was worth it. And we had people from all over the country. We had ground-penetrating radar, electromagnetic induction, real soil scientists digging in the dirt. And we found, take a guess.
Nothing.
Well, we found...
iron ore?
Well, we found a lot of really high bedrock and dirt.
Okay.
So,
kind of what I would expect.
So all of the claims of these minerals weren't there.
It's just rock.
It's just bedrock and dirt. So I immediately put our report together, because we had an investigation there and there were a couple of unusual happenings. I mean, nothing I'd just jump up and down about.
All right.
But the thing about it was, I have this report that says this isn't why the ghosts are here. So I immediately handed it off to the guys from Ghost Hunters, because they happened to be there when I went back. And I gave it to management and everybody else, all the ghost tour guides. And I said, stop with this. You got ghost stories. Run with the ghost stories. They're cool ghost stories. And a year to the day of handing it off to them, the Ghost Adventurers were up there on their live broadcast. And the paranormal expert at the hotel at the time gave them the same story about the minerals under the hotel.
Because they've been riding this wave for...
forever.
A couple decades now.
Well, the problem was, before Ghost Hunters went there, they were losing money.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they were not doing well.
Nope.
And then all of a sudden, a TV show features them, and it's like, bang, our rooms that we were selling for $50 a night are going for $500 a night now.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing okay.
Yes.
And I don't see a problem with, you know, playing the whole paranormal angle, but at least don't add on to it like that.
So while you were there, did you have any experiences? Did you run into the Commodore on the third floor, the little girls, or the cowboy, or the cleaning lady, or any of those?
Well, the little kids running around on the fourth floor.
Mm-hmm.
We were in room 401.
Okay.
And I had cameras outside of 401, too, because I don't trust people.
Agreed.
They'll mess with you. So I start hearing what sounds like people moving around out on the fourth floor in the hallway. And it's way past the middle of the night, and I'm like, cool, wonder what that is. So I start looking at the cameras, and I realize the people in the room next door had actually unbolted the big screen TV off the wall and were trying to smuggle it out of the hotel in the middle of the night. So that wasn't a ghost, but you know, that happened.
Holy underwear.
Now, we did have one experience. Because this was part of the documentary, and we've been up there for books and documentaries, mm-hmm. Thankfully we haven't had to pay any time we went up there. But one of the things they did was gave us the entire, concert hall.
Okay. And that's the one where you hear the music, or you hear like the whole orchestra that they've made those kind of claims.
And there's a story about a woman who was, I don't know, homeless, something like that, who froze to death, which I have never been able to confirm, but they love that story.
They do love that story.
But we were in there, and nobody else was in the building. And the thing that I found interesting about this is they had one key to that building at the time. It wasn't the hopping place that it is now.
Right.
So they gave us the key and said, you know,
when
you're done, lock the doors, which happens to us a lot. But we had two investigators up in the control room up there where you can overlook the entire concert floor.
Right.
And nobody else in the building. And over the night, the sound started building up. It sounded kind of like people walking around on a wood floor very quietly. And it was getting a little louder, a little more, you know, just, it sounded like somebody was trying to sneak into the building.
Right.
So one of our investigators is like, holds up a sign. He's like, I've got to go downstairs. Another one picks up a sign and says, no. Because we want to hear
we want to see what happens. Exactly.
So just after that is a very loud sound of a door slamming shut. The only door in that building that makes that sound is the front door, and we had a camera on it, and it didn't move.
Hmm.
And we spent a couple hours wandering through the rest of the building, slamming doors, trying to
recreate the sound,
figure out what it was, and we never could figure out what it was. So,
okay.
But of all the things and all the time that we've been there, that was pretty much the highlight.
The only thing that I've ever gotten, personally, was I heard, like, the faint sound of, like, piano keys. That was it. And I didn't know where it could come from. I couldn't find a trace of it or anything like that.
Right.
But I just kind of knocked that up to my own imagination. The other one was we had, I think it's the Commodore. It's the room right next to the elevator. And that, I think that's on the third floor.
The one next
Dunkirk.
To the elevator is 401.
Yeah, 401. So we had someone in 401, and there's the story of if you go into the closet, Dunkirk will touch you if you're female. So at the time with the investigating team I had Maddie with us. So I put her in the closet. She was in there 3 seconds, and she came shooting out of the closet saying something touched her. But in those situations, I mean, there's no marks, there's no nothing. I think it's her own mind.
Well, and that's what I tell people.
Just freaking herself out.
You sit around and you talk to, especially at a private residence.
Yes.
They're dumping all of this really emotional ghost stories on you, and you listen to all these stories and then lock yourself in the house where they're happening and not expect some psychological problem.
Yeah.
You're going to find something even if it's not there.
Yeah. Or a bag full of empty wine bottles, because you got to deal with that.
Well, we did have the one where the family said, well, we did have a roommate who, he trafficked about 500 pounds of meth through here in about a month, but like, well, I guess
yes,
I know.
No impact whatsoever.
Yeah.
Jesus. So, and now you and I were talking about this, Brian, before we started, and I wanted to start with this story because I find it absolutely fascinating. There's a lot of different ghost stories in Colorado. We actually had a segment called Creepy Colorado for a while, but you run out of stories because you can't keep talking about the same stuff. But there is a story, and it's up in Black Hawk, where an image of a woman continually reappears, and it manifests itself on a specific date.
Right. Basically, what it is there was a, and I'm going to do this off the top of my head, so we'll see if I get it right. There was a worker up in the mines up there,
mm-hmm.
who he was pretty big in the city. He had a good reputation. He was a very good-looking guy. And he had this woman who was kind of admiring him from afar. And he ends up dying. So she's seen the following day at his gravesite. putting flowers at the grave.
Right.
Since then, every November the 1st, she's said to come down from the top of the hill, place flowers at the grave, and disappear back into the hills. And you would think after 22 years of this almost, I would have gone up on November the 1st, but it seems that November the 1st is always a day I don't want to get up early. So it may
oddly enough,
a mystery, yeah. But it's an amazing story.
It is an amazing story, and I've had other people come up to me and tell me the same story, and I, like you, funny enough, I find other things to do November 1st
exactly.
That I don't make it up there. And there's another one where an individual approached me. He found that I was a Ghostbuster, and he told me the story of this girl who had this horrible car accident, died on the scene, and she continually reappears at the sign of the accident. And you'll get chatter, sometimes the phone will ring, and supposedly it's her because she died on her phone. And there's other things that manifest at this accident, because this isn't the only one that's happened there, that other people in there, you can feel like a huge cold spot right where this female and other people have died. But I haven't investigated it, and I haven't gotten the rest of the details, but it's something that I was just like, okay, very interesting.
So both of these are fairly recent. You said just 20-some years ago.
Well, the one up in Central City, Blackhawk, however you look at it, was during the gold rush.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So I think
so
this was like 1886?
Okay. Yeah, ish.
Somewhere around there, if I remember my history correctly.
The cell phone one's a little more recent.
Cell phone one is within the last 10 years, within the last decade.
Yeah, okay. And it was a prototype cell phone back in the 1800s. Now, there is the one that I always found interesting, even back when I was getting into this. And back when I first started getting into this, there were, including us, three groups in town.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was just nobody doing it. And I helped with a survey of paranormal groups. It's going on about 6 years ago, and there were almost 200 groups in town.
Wow.
A huge difference. Kind of a popular field now. But one of the ones, and you're going to shake your head when I say this, that everybody had to go to, Third Bridge.
Oh, Jesus.
Never been there. And for a couple of reasons. It turns out that nobody seems to really know where it is. It depends on who you talk to. And I think the bridge that they're talking about doesn't exist anymore.
I think it got washed out or destroyed.
Well, and the wreck that they're talking about didn't happen that long ago. It was a more current story.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out, in doing a little research and not going out there but just looking it up, the crash that happened, I knew the driver. And honestly, he wasn't bright enough to haunt anything.
There was the only reason he's haunting is he's too dumb to cross over.
Exactly. It was kind of a crazy person, lots of drugs and bad choices that led to that crash. Now, it did kill people. There's no question about that. But it's kind of bizarre when you look into it. It's like, hold on a minute. I know these people, you know?
All right. Has there been an investigation or a story or something that you've walked away from that you're like, fuck? I mean, just outright chicken skin, totally like, okay, this one, fuck off.
Stories, yes. Absolutely. And it's the private cases,
mm-hmm.
those stories. The public ones, everybody's heard them, you know, it's the Phantom Hitchhiker.
The Insidious and all that
whatever.
Crap, right?
But and for some reason, little kid ghosts freak me out, and I don't know why. But a couple of them that I can tell you, we had one that this family had, their kid was talking to somebody all the time. And they couldn't figure out who it was, and they were like, well, he's playing with somebody.
Imaginary friend type of thing, right.
And they called me the minute that they talked to him, and they said, so who are you talking to? He says, well, the other mommy. And I'm like, oh. Yeah, that, yeah.
Okay, that gave me a chill.
that was the chicken skin moment. Another one that I thought was kind of interesting, and this has got two parts to it. It was just off of an Indian reservation. And it had, you know, the whaler
Right.
It had that whole vibe to it. And there was a family. It was a mother, about a five-year-old little boy, and the father. And the father wasn't at home when we were doing the initial interview. So it's just mom and the kid, and she's scared. The little kid, he's in the other room playing, so
right.
He doesn't have... Her husband walks in, and he is this big truck driver-looking guy, and I'm like, oh, great. He's going to ask me to leave. He's, you know, what a... He sat down...
It's a high school moment waiting to happen. Exactly. I'm about to get bullied out of right. somebody's house that they asked me to. Got it.
Exactly. So I'm like, this guy, he's not going to give her a chance to talk to him.
Mm.
So he sat down and talked to me, and during the conversation, he was shaking so much he could hardly hold a cigarette. I mean, he was just terrified of this. Well, it turns out that he is so afraid of what's going on that he sleeps with a gun under his pillow now.
Jesus.
Which I asked him, what exactly is it that you're going to do with a gun? But made him feel better.
Mm-hmm.
But he said one night he woke up and his wife was screaming that there was something coming down from the ceiling. And he looked to the side of the bed and there was a little girl standing next to the bed looking at him. And he... At that point, you know, there's a certain time when you look at people and it's like, well, they're making up a story.
Right.
And it may have been, you know, a lucid dream, but he believed it. I mean, he absolutely believed it. But in the same house, their son was playing in his bedroom.
Hmm.
And middle of the night, he shouldn't have been up, but they were like, okay, well, you know, doesn't have to go to school the next day or anything. So all is well. And they said at one point they heard what sounded like another kid talking back to him. So they got up and went into the room because, you know, they heard the toys playing and
right.
all this, just like a couple of kids playing. They said they got into the room and found him sound asleep in his bed. Yeah.
Wow.
So just bizarre stuff.
So in those situations, I mean, obviously they're convinced.
Right.
How, I mean, do you try and give them some kind of solace? Do you try to comfort them? Do you try and disprove? I mean, are you left at that point?
The answer is you can't, to quote one of my favorite people, you can't debunk something that isn't bunk in the first place.
Hmm.
So,
true story.
I mean, you can only explain so many things, but you have to be able to draw the line when you're explaining what it might be to them. Because most groups would go in and go, yep, you got a demon in your house, and leave. We've witnessed that.
Thank you, Insidious.
Exactly. We've witnessed that so many times. And the real answer that we give them is we haven't been able to figure out what's going on. We haven't had any credible, you know, proof as to what it may be. We don't know. We'll keep looking into it. But to comfort them, there's a few things that we've been able to do. First of all, when we initially talk to somebody, whoever it is that's asking for help, we say, would you please fill out a diary
okay.
of what's going on?
That's
and go back in time and kind of write it down, because it does a couple of things. First of all, it shows up as us if there's any pattern.
Right.
Because if there
gives
is...
Gives you a timeline.
Right. Because if something's happening every Thursday at noon and we show up at, you know, Friday at midnight, not a lot of luck. But also, it gives them the ability to analyze it too and go, oh, well, it doesn't happen as often as I thought it did. And it also gives them kind of their own power back. Because that's what people, I think, have the biggest problem with, is the ability in their own home to control what's going on. They lose it. And being able to give them just that little piece of power back to say, here, let's try and figure out what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, and I know there's a lot of people that will argue with me about this, but the big thing I tell them is, you know, in all the years I've been doing this, I've never seen anybody hurt by, you know, a reported ghost in their house. I've seen people that were afraid and spun around and went down a stairway. I saw the same thing, spun around and went into a wall, cold cocked himself, and claimed that the ghost knocked him out. But that aside, you know, it's kind of a good thing to say, don't worry, it's not going to hurt you. And in fact, a lot of the times they're not really afraid, they're just questioning. And I'm like, you know, you're having an experience here that not everybody gets to have. Real or not, it's kind of cool that you get to experience this. So, you know, relish in the fact you get that.
Right.
It's something special that not everybody else gets. And a lot of people really take that and run with it. They're like, okay, I'm not going to be afraid of it
anymore.
Nice
spin on it.
Well, and that's the thing, is just make them not afraid of their own home, especially when there's kids involved. Because there's nothing as bad as the kids not being as afraid as the parents are, and now the parents are starting to freak out the kids. So you have to be able to work with them and say, okay, this is what we're going to do.
Do you have a question?
No.
No?
I got it.
Okay. Brett's just sitting over there quiet and shit. Is there anywhere in Colorado you haven't investigated minus the Black Hills? Or
Black Hawk Cemetery.
Thank you, yeah.
Central City Cemetery, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
There's tons of them. Every time... I'll run a number by you because it terrified me the other day. I was trying to figure out how many people over the past X amount of time we've actually talked to.
Mm-hmm.
And we do a ton of public speaking and tours and all this sort of stuff. And I figured we're pushing the 60 to 70,000 people mark that we've been able to
talk to. That you've interviewed and talked to and entertained.
Exactly. And at the end of every talk, or in the middle usually, they always say, have you been to this place? And I'm like, I've never even heard of that place. There are so many different locations in just the state that we're never going to run out.
Do you think they're growing in number because of people's paranoia and the media influence that they've all had? Or do you think that they've been there and just no one has noticed until now?
I think that the public's interest has an unfortunate side effect that what wasn't considered to be ghosts previously, they've watched a lot of TV, and now something that they would have gone, hey, I'm just going to write that off because it's a natural thing.
The same noise my dishwasher makes.
Exactly. And, I mean, that's really popular in the private sector, where I've asked a lot of people. I'll give you a case here. We went into a location, private house, was mom and two kids. And during the interview, I was like, so do you want to take the kids and put them in another room so they don't have to listen to this? And they're like, oh, no, they know all about it. Okay, you're
all
a parent, as you wish. So in the middle of talking, she says, so have you ever watched Paranormal State? And I'm like, yeah, a couple of times, not on purpose. Why? And she says, well, you know the demon that follows the lead guy around in it? And I'm thinking, yeah, Belial, what about him? Because, you know, you're not supposed to say the name.
Mm-hmm.
They even don't spell it completely.
Yeah.
I've tried. He won't show up. But the thing is, they were convinced that not only was it Belial, but it was in her son's bedroom.
Just chilling.
And I said, here's the deal. We're going to leave, and you're going to quit watching all these paranormal TV shows. Go out, get some sunlight, have fun, play some games, do.
I'm getting a William Shatner moment here from Saturday Night Live.
Get a life, exactly.
Get a life, you dumb motherfucker. Move out of your mother's basement. Get a life.
And that's honestly been a lot of things. Is people, they watch too much of this stuff. We went to a home that had all sorts of reported things going in it, and I love this family. They worked with us really well to explain everything that had happened. But one of the first questions, I said, you guys watch a ton of paranormal television, don't you? And they're like, we watch all of them. So, okay, first, you're not watching those anymore because they're scaring you. And, you know, you would think as adults we'd know better, but we're humans. We don't know any better.
Subconscious is a bitch.
Exactly. Your mind is a terrible thing.
It's yes.
It will mess with you.
It's got nothing better to do. It's just laying around all day.
Exactly. And that's really the thing, is I think the media has pushed it into so many things being perceived that wouldn't have previously.
Hmm.
And I hate to keep going back to the Stanley Hotel, but hey, sometimes you have to.
It's an easy target.
Exactly. In the times that we've been there, the last few times, we actually couldn't do any kind of an investigation because the place is a freak show. It is constantly just crawling with everybody and their dog with a camera and an audio recorder. And
yep.
We tried to sequester off an area, and they're, like, breaking in. You guys, the ghost hunters. It's like, we're done. So what we ended up doing was walking around the building and explaining to people, this is what's in your picture. This is what's going on. But we actually watched a lot of these ghost stories start. That it wasn't there before, but because they'd witnessed this, now we're watching other people in the hotel at the same time talking about it because they've heard about it.
Because they've heard about it.
So we're watching urban legends build. And like you said, they had five or six ghost stories to start with. They have hundreds now.
I mean, the only one that laughed, that I laughed about, was the Jim Carrey story. Because he had a coming to Jesus moment.
Dumb and Dumber was.
It was Dumb and Dumber was being filmed up there, and he's in the corner room where Stephen King wrote. And there's a maid.
217.
217. And they're at the point when I was there. They don't rent the room out anymore. Okay. They're like it's off limits. But at the time, Jim Carrey was in there, and there's a maid that supposedly, if you're a single guy or a swinger or, you know, ill repute kind of person, she gets a little testy. So Jim Carrey calls down to the front desk asking for another room. Just saying, I don't like my room. I'm not comfortable. I need another room. And they're like, we're sorry, Mr. Carrey. It's all we have. You know, we apologize, but we're sold out. Okay. Another, like, 10, 15 minutes goes by, and Carrey comes running down the stairs, throws the key at the desk, and I'm never coming back in here again.
And he left.
And he left. And he's never talked
True
about
story.
It.
Yeah.
True story. He's never talked about it. This is the top of the story, because he's reiterated it much this, but he will not say what happened inside that room.
Wow. I think it was the limestone.
Exactly.
It must have been the limestone.
I do have one really good creepy hospital ghost story for you. But
Ooh.
Before I go there, to show you, I was saying, you know, the mind is a terrible thing.
Yes.
At the Stanley, I watched how people's perception can be changed based on what they want it to be.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
They called us to the other side of the hotel, and by them, I mean people wandering around trying to find ghosts. And they said, it's really bizarre. We're smelling cigar smoke over here. And, you know, cigar smoke, ghosts, it's hand in hand. Why? Who knows? So we go over there, and initially I'm like, you know, yeah, kind of smells like cigar smoke here. And then I start smelling and I'm like, okay, let's break away from this and think about it. Well, it turns out that right by where they were smelling what they thought smelled like cigar smoke was a guest room, and this guy was too cheap to go down to the restaurant. He was making bacon cheeseburgers in his room, and we were smelling the bacon. But because they were so convinced that they were going to smell cigars, the bacon smelled like a cigar.
Bacon still smells like bacon to me. I'm a fan of cigars. Everybody knows this. Bacon still smells like bacon.
Now, here's one that you want a creepy ghost story, and it's one of my favorites. The Old Children's Hospital.
Oh, the one that was over on 6th Avenue?
17th.
Okay. I know. Okay. 17th and Franklin.
Yep.
Okay.
I actually worked there for a few years, so it was really creepy going into it a decade later to do a ghost investigation. But what was happening is they were taking the building down. It was being demolished.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many ghost stories around there. Even when I was working there, I had heard the ghost stories. I kind of looked around, but wasn't really into it at the time. And when they were taking the building down, before they did, they had to strip all the copper out of it because that was the
day. It's a shit ton of money
exactly.
Right there.
And, you know, they had a lot of hazardous things they had to get out.
Well, I mean, this hotel was built, what, the early 60s?
Early 1900s.
Wow. Yeah, so no asbestos and all sorts of badness is inside
exactly.
of this building.
Yeah, from the 1900s to the 1970s, they just kept adding on. So what ended up happening is a bunch of off-duty police officers got hired to guard the place. I love law enforcement, don't get me wrong, but they are the most how can I put this, superstitious bunch of people you will ever deal with. And they were terrified. And that's who called us in. It wasn't,
wow.
It wasn't the hospital. It was the off-duty cops that called us in. And it was one room in particular up on the fifth floor.
Okay.
And the fifth floor was the oncology ward.
Okay.
So not a great place to be. And right around the corner from this room was the morgue. So extra creepy.
Yep.
So when we got there, what happened is this one cop came out and he says, that fifth floor, I don't know what's going on up there. He says, it's just crazy. He says, if I have to go up there and I see anything move, lead's flying. Which is really encouraging because that's where we're headed. So
thank you, Mr. Officer.
So the story is, up in this room, 562, since the 1950s, children would get checked into the room, and you're talking
cancer. And they'd never check
exactly.
out.
Exactly. And you're talking cancer patients, so, you know, they're trying to be nice to these kids. And consistently, they would have the kid wake up in the middle of the night screaming that there was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed child holding them down, trying to strangle them. And
that's rather descriptive.
That is so consistent with sleep paralysis. However, the stories for sleep paralysis are based on the belief system of whoever it is that's doing it. And they were never being fed that information.
Yeah, these are kids. They have no idea.
Well, and the patients and staff, they're great people. And they aren't going to tell the kids, you know, I know you got cancer.
Why are you so stupid? Why'd you get cancer?
Exactly. So, yeah, tonight's going to get even worse for you. So we knew that wasn't happening. But over the years, this was consistent. And it was so popular that when they closed the hospital down, the last thing that they did was got the patients and the staff and the parents to all with permanent markers right on the walls. Write your memories. Write what's gone on here.
Oh, wow.
And thankfully, I got to walk through the building for 2 days and document that because nobody else bothered to. And it's heartbreaking reading some of this stuff. Every time I have to put together a talk about the hospital and I read them, I'm like bawling my eyes out in the corner.
That kind of gives me the creeps. Because, I mean, that building was really creepy because it was right there on the corner and it looked like some medieval house of horrors.
Oh, yeah, it definitely
it was like made
time.
Out of like, it looked like something that you would expect out of Ghostbusters. Shandor's temple
exactly.
On top of the apartment complex looked exactly like the outside architecture of this children's hospital.
Exactly. Well, and the thing is, you know, we were going to look at this one room, hopefully hear something, see something. There were some bizarre sounds we couldn't quite figure out. There's a much longer story that goes with it. But the thing that I found most interesting about it is when the patients and everybody were leaving, the staff wrote on the wall on the outside of the room, said things that we won't miss, and it listed, you know, like broken equipment and all this. The number one thing says the ghosts. And then inside the room, this ghost had been known as Shane for 50 years. And across the main wall in the room, it says, "Good night, Shane." Which, that was kind of cool and creepy. But we did a lot of tours for about 6 or 7 years. And one of the stops was the old children's hospital.
All right.
And we'd tell all the stories about all the different things that had gone on there. Well, one night we'd left, and this woman says, "Can I talk to you guys about this?" And it was in front of the crowd. She's like, "I don't care who hears this." Like, "Okay, what do you got?" She said, back in the 50s, she had a relative that was staying there on the fifth floor because he had cancer, and he ended up dying on the fifth floor. His name was Shane. I'm like, I can't prove that. I can't look up the records. I can't do that, but that's the creepiest thing I've ever heard in my life.
That's, yeah, rather.
So it made for a
what does your relative have against children?
Exactly.
With the demolishing of the building, because it's entirely new landscape
it's
there.
It's a brand new parking lot.
It's a brand new parking lot. Has there been any other stories or sightings? Have you gone back to dip your toe back in that to see if there's anything.
No, but I can tell you that within 2 weeks, the new children's hospital out in Aurora had a haunting on the fifth floor.
Shut up.
And they were, it made the first newsletter that came out for that hospital.
So Shane's a traveling roadshow.
Apparently, yeah, he decided to go with them. I don't know.
Wow.
But I thought that was kind of funny that, yeah, they called and they're like, yeah, we still have it.
Wow. Because that's uncharacteristic.
Yeah, you don't hear traveling ghosts very often.
No.
But it made for another amazing story. So.
Interesting. Have you ever been to the Colorado Hotel?
Only in walking through.
Okay.
Victor Hotel was a fun one.
I haven't done the Victor.
And I believe that's the one that they just converted to the horror-themed hotel.
Yes.
Which is kind of interesting. Actually, I have a fun one about that. One of our guys was walking through the hotel. We had the whole place to ourselves because they were pretty much closed down for a radio show that we were involved with.
And nicely done, Orson Welles.
Yeah. So he's walking through, just kind of taking pictures and all this, and he's got a recorder in his back pocket. And he has a recording of what sounds like somebody talking. Just a kind of a whisper going, "Who are you?"
Ooh.
And it's followed by the sound of him running back to us because it freaked him out. So what it was, I don't know. But there was some comedy that followed this. we were on the Zoo Boo tour, which was Dave Logan and Scott Hastings.
Correct.
And Dave, he's average-sized guy. Scott?
Scott's huge.
He's a giant.
Yes.
And
he's tops, what, 6'4"?
He's got to be 6'5"? And I accidentally forgot that I'd put cameras in their room because I didn't know it was their room. They were staying in the most haunted room.
Of course.
So I've got the public out there, and they start stripping down in the room, so I had to kind of run over and all that. But in the middle of the night, the guy that got this recording keeps playing it over and over and over in the hallway, trying to figure out what it is. Well, they heard it in their room and thought it was in there with them. So I hear this commotion from the end of the hallway. I run down there, and just as I get there, the door opens. Dave is on the ground still trying to get dressed, and Scott is tripping over him trying to get out of the room.
Oh, my God.
So
Abbott and Costello trying to get out of the...
True ghost hunters, they run.
Invisible man. Yes. Don't run towards. Run away.
Exactly.
Personal question. How do you classify yourself? Are you a skeptic? Do you believe? Is there something?
See, let me realign your dictionary. Skeptic, yes. Reason I say that is skeptic, by definition, is someone who's open to all possible explanations.
Very true.
Until they have, you know,
evidence, proof, something that
one
gives
or
you
the other.
Yes.
So you really have a cynical believer and a cynical non-believer, and the skeptic in the middle. And I like to hope that I'm right there in the middle. Now I'll admit that there's two times it's really difficult. If you walk into some creepy place, like, oh, let's say an old children's hospital that's falling apart and half under demolition, and
the environment is set. The stage is there.
Yeah, it really messes with you. You sit around listening to ghost stories with people and spend the night. Yeah, that's really bad. But then you run into the other one. It's like, this is the 20th house I've been in, and nothing's happened in these 20. No, it doesn't exist. So you've really got to learn how to stay on that fence and not believe or not believe. And that's difficult.
Yes.
Until it's a private home, and then you're trying to actually help somebody through their problem.
All right. Do you feel you've helped people?
I'd like to humor myself and say yes.
as best you can.
Yeah, I mean, the answer is I've had a lot of people tell me, you know, thank you for giving me my life back.
That's empowering.
I'm not afraid of my house anymore. I'm not afraid of my business anymore.
No, that's empowering.
And yeah, that helps.
It does.
But at the same time,
that's better than any therapy or couch session.
Oh, it is.
Out there.
It's a huge ego boost. But you know, there's a lot of ones we've had to walk away from and say, I don't know what it was.
Hmm.
And
those are probably more frustrating than anything
else.
It
is. Thankfully, they aren't that current, really. I mean, they just, it's easy to explain a lot of this.
Right. So recently, you and I have become involved with the very necessary and very needed Colorado Festival of Horror.
Exactly.
And is it just the soft spot with your mother that has gotten you into the horror side of it? I mean, is it,
I think that's what dragged me into it.
How extensive, because I've heard rumors. I've heard rumors.
And those rumors are true.
How extensive is your horror collection? Because I know you've promised me a tour, and I'm going to take you up on that. But for
too.
The time being,
it's,
how extensive?
It's too much, really.
It's never too much.
And I'm not stopping. Well, I realize that there may be a problem when there's not an inch of shelf or wall space left. The ceiling is the only thing I have left, and I just can't do that.
You really sound like that Friday the 13th show, where it's just a menagerie,
yes,
of curios and everything filled to the brim.
Well, and it is, and it's kind of a mix of stuff, because obviously horror stuff. I've got a lot of props and signed items and
things
like that. But then it's a lot of, I like to collect obscure religious items. It kind of goes in the mix.
I guess that is true.
We have some stuff from music. We've got some signed band stuff, things like that, which takes up a pretty good portion of it. But, you know, some of the items that I think are probably the most interesting, we have some of the original casket hardware from Cheeseman Park when it was an old cemetery.
Oh, when they demolished it and turned it into the garden.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, and half of that's actually on display at the airport right now, but Haunted Colorado exhibit.
Yes.
But I have that. And then the two prize pieces of bizarre like that are, how familiar are you with the Fox Sisters?
Fuzzy at best.
They're the ones that started spiritualism, the whole seance thing and all that.
Oh, yeah.
And when they remodeled their main building back in 1904, they purchased new tables. It's our coffee table now. We have one of them there.
I think that's a pretty good, that's a prized possession there in my mind.
Well, and then one of my other favorites, and it's really not, well, I guess it could be paranormal. How hip are you on your Catholicism?
I'm pretty versatile.
Padre Pio, the paranormal padre.
Wasn't he like based out of Mexico and was doing all sorts of different exorcisms?
Oh, he was based in Italy.
Ah.
And he's the one that got kicked out of the church because his claims were so over the top. He was possessed. He was levitating. Mm. He had stigmata.
I was going to say, wasn't he like one of the key instigators for the stigmata and all of the driving force behind that?
Oh, yeah. He was bleeding from everything.
Yep.
There's a lot of reasons that he probably faked it, and they have some proof. But regardless of that, he's now Saint Pio. That's the last thing John Paul did, was canonized him on the way out the door.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So,
what's he the patron saint of?
Bleeding? I don't know.
Gushing from orifices?
So, I find on an online auction a book. It's the Missal Romanum, which is the big book you see up at the front of the church.
Right.
All the,
it's what you do the sermons from the pulpit and all of that.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And in the non-indexed portion of this site is a little note that says that something about Padre Pio. And I'm like, well, I must buy this.
Yeah.
So I got a hold of it, and it turns out that this book, huge story behind it, but was given to an American missionary by Padre Pio, who had used it in his church for a while, and had been passed down and lost, and didn't know what to do with it, and it ended up being given to Goodwill for a donation. So I ended up with it. I had this thing authenticated by the Padre Pio Society.
Oh, he has a whole society now?
He has three of them. Well, I guess it's Saint Pio's.
Saint.
But, so the thing was, I was like, well, this is kind of cool, because if something is owned by a saint, that makes it like a second-class relic.
Pretty much.
But then I started
There's a bit of divinity attached to it now.
Well, it gets even better, because I started looking through the book, and the old padre was a bleeder. There are blood stains all over the book.
which raises the question, though.
It's the blood of a saint on the book.
Wow. Is it real? Is it real blood? Have you had it tested?
Oh, it is real blood.
Okay. Because that would be like my first, like, you know, is it corn syrup? Saintly enough for, or what was...
So, yeah, this is now a first-class Catholic relic.
Wow.
And the society said, you know, we'd like you to donate that book back. Like, not a chance.
Yeah, stone's chance in hell.
So cool to have this. So it's part of the collection now. And, you know, like the movie props. One of the ones I just got that I'm kind of happy with. You've seen Serpent in the Rainbow?
Yes, really creepy.
You
creepy
remember
film.
When the little, very small bride pulls her mouth open and the snake shoots out and grabs him by the face?
Mm-hmm.
I got snake.
Ooh.
Yeah. But the house is full of this stuff. So
the house is full. Not just a little smattering.
Literally. It's
full.
So you have a house full of this stuff. Does your mind ever go, there's hauntings in my house now?
You know?
Yeah. Are you worried that you may have brought in a rogue element?
I hope. I really hope. And that's what I tell people. They're like, you know, you got to watch out for haunted items. I'm like, if there was a place that was going to be haunted, it would be there. And I can sleep very comfortably in the living room and look at this stuff. Now, I will say, there was a movie that came out, It's Alive.
Uh-huh.
Rick Baker's second movie, I guess, is how you'd put it. The Little Demon Baby.
Mm-hmm.
I went to see that on my own as a child instead of going to the movie I was supposed to go to, and was the only one in the theater, and proceeded in absolutely freaking myself out. Terrified me. To this day, I hear that little cry that it did, and it still freaks me out.
Yeah.
So I found somebody that had built a reproduction of that baby that is, nothing against Rick, the man is a genius, much better than the original. This thing has, like, real eyes and eyelashes and looks like a real
authentic type of
baby.
Yeah.
So I had to buy it, and it sits on my desk. And I will say, every once in a while, when I walk out in the middle of the night, that's like one of the few things that kind of freaks me out.
Yeah, hey, confront your fears.
And that's how I look at it.
Any, like, ringings of salt around anything?
No. But, you know, that's one of the things about the whole paranormal investigation thing is, I tell people, if you really want to get into it, the first thing you have to do is throw away your fight-or-flight mechanism, and if there's something going on that people are terrified of,
you're running towards it, not away from it.
Go towards the danger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard to do.
Yes.
But now, that's what I do, and it's fun.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Brett, no questions? You've been marginally quiet over there.
I've been fascinated by all these stories.
I could go on for weeks.
So what does your tour schedule look like? Where are you going? Where are you going to be?
I am absolutely not booked right now.
Okay. You just finished the Rush season.
The season is over,
yep.
And I am grateful.
Hear, hear.
I do have a horror podcast that's been kicking around for a while that I'm bringing back to life now that I've got time.
Okay. Where can they find that? Where are you who's going to be hosting it? Or is it going to be on Podbean? Or are you going through...
I've got it on Podbean. Okay. I've got it on YouTube. I've got it streaming in like 3 million places.
All right.
It's tied onto iTunes. It's tied onto... The whole thing's there, and I have one up. But, yeah.
One hole
life,
up.
Life took over. Because I did a podcast about 6 years ago, and we did a lot of...
Covered a lot of ground.
We started doing paranormal and realized we didn't like paranormal people, so...
They're a bit eccentric?
Yeah,
I'll go with eccentric.
So we did a big dive into the scientific and horror movie and music community.
All right.
So it was kind of an idea of who won't talk to us in real life, but when we tell them we have a radio, they'll do it. And they do.
They do.
Which is really cool. But to find both of the places that I'm available, RockyMountainParanormal.com is the paranormal side of things, and all of the investigations, you can actually download a PDF with them. If there's any audio or video, it's all right there.
Very nice. So at fingertips, not hiding anything.
Not at all.
Okay.
Now, there's some private investigations that I've, you know,
well, of course. I mean,
I've redacted a lot, but they're still there.
All right.
And as far as the podcast, do you like scarymovies.com? Which is long, but it was kind of a cool domain.
It's still a cool domain. Not everything can be shortened.
Exactly.
And sweet.
Yeah, RockyMountainParanormal.com I don't recommend as a domain name because every time I have to fill out my email address, it drags right off the end of the page.
Yeah. God damn it.
Yeah.
Should really just abbreviate
I'm
this.
I'm buying a short URL just to do that.
Just have a point to the new one.
Exactly.
Brett, you have been spearheading and a member of the Colorado Festival of Horror. What is going on in your guys' camp? What is new besides Dan Crozier embarrassing yours truly and many other fans of horrordom?
Oh, we're ramping up big time. It's exciting now. Our new website just went live Halloween night. It's kofohorror.com, which is kofohorror.com. We have opportunities that are going to be coming live shortly for volunteers at the show. Again, September 11 through 13, 2020. We have sponsor opportunities on the website, and we're just really ramping up for the show. We got some exciting things planned. We're going to have all kinds of everything, horror vendors, horror artists, horror writers, horror actors.
Jesus. Sounds like a real horror show.
We're going to have some cool exclusive stuff, like exclusive pins from out of the great local company Fan Sets. We are working with the amazing Hex Publishers to put out a horror anthology to premiere at the show.
Wow.
With an exclusive cover. 13 stories from amazing variety of writers, local and national, and it's just really getting more and more exciting day by day.
Wow.
Expect before the end of the year, it's probably early bird tickets to go on sale, and like I said, the vendor stuff to go live.
And it will.
And a guest announcement.
And hopefully a guest announcement.
Yes.
And it's going to be a vote for whose vendors. It's not. It's a process. They don't automatically get
right.
greenlit.
Right. Because we really want to see a variety. We really want to see major horror themes with the people that we accept. So we'll have a little bit of an adjudication process to make sure we. Because we don't have the biggest space for year one. It's our inaugural year.
And we don't want guys sitting there selling windows.
Correct. Right. No bathtub salesmen.
No bathtub.
Unless it's Alfred Hitchcock bathtubs.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Kind of like the guy selling solar panels at the Metaphysical Fair.
Exactly.
Like, why?
Well, you know, cut down on those lights flickering or something like that.
Colorado definitely needs another horror convention because they have gone away.
We felt like it's really been a while. Mile High Horror Film Festival is coming back in May after a five-year absence, but we're excited about that. But they really want to focus just on film,
right.
And we're helping them and cross-promoting with them. So we've got 2020, the return of horror to Colorado, Film Festival in May, Colorado Festival of Horror in September.
Good Lord.
Exciting year.
That is a lot. Do you feel... that we are in a golden age of horror? Because, I mean, a lot of us have talked about it on the podcast, and, I mean, our opinion can only go so far.
Absolutely. I mean, the films that we're seeing coming out. I mean, Jordan Peele seems like he's re-energized the entire... I keep hearing these horror sounds.
It's a cloister bell from the TARDIS. My phone's going off.
We're having some amazing films, you know, like Hereditary and Midsommar and... I mean, just some really cool stuff being made now. I think it's definitely a big resurgence.
Well, it's a resurgence in good horror.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
We've always well done. Had really, and I love this stuff anyway, but we've always had really bad slasher films and gore fest, and those don't go away, and I'm glad, and I will watch them all. But the high-end horror, I think, is really coming back.
Yeah. Which is nice, because, I mean, there's always the room for the slasher films
right.
and the cheap scares and, you know, the teenage slaughters, which are endlessly amusing to me. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the highbrow kind of... I mean, even watching, like, The Purge mm-hmm. show, which is really interesting, and then Evil, that new show, mm-hmm. that actually has been surprisingly solid. And it's got the guy that played Luke Cage from the Marvel side playing one of the key characters, and it is actually very well thought out.
Well, and horror television is kind of a new thing.
Yes.
Really. Well, it's not. It's coming back.
Well, it's yes, and in a better way than the cheesy Scream
so
Queens or anything
outlets.
Like that.
I mean,
yes.
Jeannie and I just finished watching Nosferatu, Joe Hill's miniseries, which was outstanding. He's got a whole new series of comics.
I don't know how to take you right now.
Hill House coming with
Hill House
DC
is coming.
Comics. Mm-hmm. Basket Full of Heads just came out. I see it over on the rack here at Time Warp Comics.
Yep.
We've got American Horror Story has been going on for an amazing, 10
this,
years
this season
now.
Actually is really good. Going back to the old 80s style
My
slasher.
My oldest son worked on 5 years of it, just saying.
Wow. Xander's amazing. That's who we should have on the podcast.
Look at The Haunting of House Hill.
Yep.
I mean, there's just some great stuff coming.
Well, and you want to talk about a great director. He's really starting to shine. Get that?
Yeah.
Wow. One funny joke.
Yeah, Dr. Sleep is marvelous. Got to go see that.
Yes. I'm so looking
didn't
forward to seeing
see
it.
Just saw it. Yeah,
right. Yeah, you had like a
preview.
Sneak peek on that
yes,
one, didn't
sneak
you?
Preview. It was excellent.
I've heard nothing but good.
It was really, really excellent. Ewan McGregor does a fantastic job. The tie-in type things that you see.
The Easter eggs?
With the Overlook Hotel, that's the name of it, right?
Yep.
It just really, really was well done. With a whole other story, too. You know, not to spoil the book.
Well, yeah, because I didn't even realize there was a book until a couple weeks ago, so I was just
We actually had Stephen King a few years ago because he has so many roots here and lived here for a couple of years. Lived by a whole bunch of IBMers on this street we heard. <'cause, laughs> So it's those kinds of people. But anyway, he did a talk when Dr. Sleep just came out. He did a talk at Chautauqua, and Jeannie and I got to go to it, and it was just really, really cool.
Yeah, see,
everybody
I missed Dr. Sleep.
Of the book.
Yeah, I missed that one.
It was really neat.
You know, one of the things that I think is interesting is he used to live in Boulder.
Right.
And one of the last things that he did, and we're in Boulder, so I can feel better with this, he applied to the Daily Camera. To be a reporter.
He did, and he
and
got
they
declined.
Declined him.
Actually,
he wasn't a good enough writer.
The Boulder, the camera still has the rejection letter, and he does.
Wall,
yep.
Yeah.
That's actually kind of funny. They're like, oh,
wow,
our bad.
It's like in the realm of him taking his first novel and throwing it in the trash, and his wife digging it out and saying, oh, this is
where it is.
Thank the Daily Camera because he'd be writing
that's true.
Little fluff pieces now, and I don't need that.
Yeah. How can I spice this up? The cat ate the owner.
A psychic cat.
So where do they need to go to keep up with the Colorado Festival of Horror besides the website?
Besides the website, we have a couple Facebook pages. You can just find it. Colorado Festival of Horror is our social media, kind of lots of fun stuff on that. And then we have KOFO: Colorado Festival of Horror for event announcements, things like that. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. And that's where you can find us.
Jesus.
Come to the show.
All right.
Come to the show.
Come to the show.
We are 10 months. 10 months away.
The countdown has begun. Tickets very soon.
Yes.
Brian, thank you so much for sitting in.
Anytime.
I'm sure we will get more stories before the year is out from you. I want to go on an investigation with you.
I'll find the place. We're there.
All right. I can arrange. I actually have the pull to do that.
That's the bargain I make everybody. They're like, do you take people on investigations? I'm like, you find the place. We'll go.
Well, I'd say we can go check out the Creepy Chick November 1st, but that was...
We just missed it.
I just missed that one. So that's a year out at least. But in the meantime, we'll come up with something, because I'd like to actually do a podcast or something out.
That would be fun.
That would be fun, because that's something I've always wanted to do. Because we did the podcast in the Stanley, and we didn't really capture anything, but to do it out, that would be kind of fun.
Now, before we do that, I have a very tedious yet fun... Paranormal Investigation 101 class that
Ooh.
I do. That
okay.
I think would be just lots of fun for you.
Okay. I'm in. We can record that and we'll just see how dopey I really am. How strong is your local Colorado Ghostbusters? Let's find out. Well, that about wraps it up here. Time Warp is closing the doors, so we are going to get out of here. Please look us up. Please give us a like. Please keep in touch, because in the end, we're all stories. So make it a good one.